It's Paul Hamilton.
I googled it on Twitter. I thought maybe, you know, I'd ask fans.
He has the facts to back up his opinions.
It's so positive, and you know, people are so happy to put their names on everything they write.
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
Paul's coming up in a moment.
Yeah,
you can call, share an opinion on the Sabres, the game last night, the 8-1-1 start. We've been talking a little bit about the Bills too, as we kind of get into game mode today as they go back to practice and start preparing for the Philadelphia Eagles Sunday at New Era Field. 803-0550 to join us this morning. By the way, this hour on WGR brought to you by UBMD Orthopedics and Sports Medicine. For urgent orthopedic care, visit uborthocare.com. Paul joining us on the West Her Hotline, brought to you by Losi and Ganji, Buffalo's workers' comp attorneys, working hard for hardworking Western New Yorkers. Good morning, Mr. Hamilton. How are you?
Howard, are you giddy yet? I mean, you've woken up to a lot of losing in the past.
I was just going
to 10 to 12 years. Are you giddy yet?
I was going to ask you that, Paul. You've seen so many bad hockey games, and
you're Mr. Buzzkill.
But even, you know, last year that the win streak was nice, but this looks like, you know, every time we come close to saying this, we want to be careful. But this looks like it might be a good hockey team.
Well, we talked about it yesterday when, you know, from the West Coast trip where they win 2 out of 3. And Jack talked about this a little bit afterwards. He didn't think he was moving his feet out west and didn't think it was the greatest. And I agreed. I didn't think he was awful by any means out west, but I didn't think he was playing quite up to par. But yet they come away with 2 wins out of 3 games. And that never happened before. I mean, usually in his 4 years as a Sabre, if they were going to win, he was a big part of the win. And if he wasn't a big part of the game, usually they didn't win. Where now they're getting scoring from other places. And, I mean, look at the overtime goal. Yeah, he scored the overtime goal and had a lot to do with it. But the overtime goal never happens. The only time San Jose had any possession at all in overtime was a rush up ice right before it. It was a very dangerous rush. It looked like the puck was coming across for a wide open chance. And Casey Mittelstadt hustled back and broke up the play before the pass could be completed. And he skated as hard as he could to get back to break up that play, and then he turns it up ice, and you all know the end result after that. But, you know, just little plays like that players are making, you know, usually we're not sitting around talking about a key Casey Mittelstadt defensive play that leads to a victory. And that's, you know, that's how I think they're all bought in. And that's what I see that's different about this team from maybe past teams.
It's funny, on Mittelstadt, I want to get back to the first question from Jeremy in a second. But you think about Mittelstadt, Paul, and late in the third period, I think there were a couple of shifts where Larson was out on that line, where he didn't have, where Kruger didn't put Mittelstadt out. And maybe that's one of those, like Dahlin, Mittelstadt, Olofsson, young guy, watch their minutes, trying to protect the lead, whatever, or tie game. And then he puts it out in overtime. And there were not just the hustle. Sure, the hustle. You put your head down, you get back, you break that play up. But then the smarts. Don't force the rush up ice if it's not there. Circles back. San Jose makes the change, he sees it, and he gets the pass to Ristolainen. Just a really good sequence all around for Mittelstadt right there.
It was an opening game. I mean, they were all over the Sharks to start, causing turnovers, and had so many opportunities. Martin Jones actually robbed them numerous times in the first period, and there were times where they passed up shots too, but that line in particular had all sorts of opportunities. Jimmy Vesey had a couple of golden opportunities there that Jones was able to stop, but that line was forcing the turnovers, and that's the thing. They were getting in on the Sharks fast, and the Sharks were, you know, panicking with the puck and then turning it over, and they were getting opportunities. And, you know, I just thought it's been a good, what do you want to say, 3-4 games for that line.
To Jeremy's initial question, if you were going to declaratively say, and I'm not asking you to, Paul, but after 10 games, if you were going to say, this is not last year's November win streak, this team is good legitimately, it would be because of what? What arguments would you cite?
They have the puck quite a bit more. I mean, puck possession I don't even think is close as far as this team to past teams. They get out of their zone quickly. It's their defensemen get back faster. And by getting back faster with the puck, that gives them the extra half second to turn and make the proper play up ice and get up ice. They're not trying to make the long pass across in the defensive zone or try to force something. They know where each other's going to be. There's support as they come back and they come up ice as a unit. And it's you know, good, crisp passes as they get up ice. And sometimes they even will use the opening to skate it up ice. You know, they'll see the opening and say, okay, we can skate it up ice and then make the pass once they get into the neutral zone. And sometimes that results in some outnumbered situations as they get up ice. So I think they're being very intelligent. Everything's done in pairs with them, where whether it's the offensive zone or defensive zone, there's pressure, there's pairs, and you know they're always in support of each other, which is a lot different than what we've seen even last year.
That answer, I guess you could use for the next question too. You were there yesterday when the media spoke for a few minutes with Jason Bottrell, and he was asked about, and it's a story you can't help but talk about, and it is, I don't mean this necessarily to dump on Housley, maybe it's more about Kruger, but what is the impact, after you answered everything you did about the way this team's playing, what is the impact that Kruger's having? Because, you know, Bottrell talked about that with you guys yesterday.
Well, they're all bought into it, and, you know, they listen to what he has to say. There isn't a panic if there's a bad period. You know, it sounds like, you know, he'll come in and they'll make the necessary corrections, and they'll say, look, you know, this isn't the way we play. You know, we have to get back to doing this, or we have to get back to doing that. And even look at the game last night. Do you think that was a period where they deserved to be down 2-0 at the end of the first period? They were all over the Sharks for a lot of that period, but a couple of mistakes, it's in their net. They're down 2-0, but there was, you know, talking to the players and talking to Kruger, there was no panic after. He came in with a very positive vibe that, look at guys, and I said, did you even ask them to start shooting more? Mm-hmm. And he goes, I don't do that in mid-game. That's not, and he goes, I don't want willy-nilly shots all over the place that, you know, you're just throwing it on net and then losing possession because you throw some. He goes, I want people around the net before there's a shot. He goes, you're putting the cart before the horse. He goes, if there's nobody around the net and you're taking a shot, it's a waste of time. He goes, we do it the other way around. We get net foot presence, we get people going to the net, and that's when pucks start going to the net.
Paul with us, 803-0550. You got a question about the Sabres. Paul will handle that for you. You got a comment you want to share, and we'll take your football calls too, or whatever else is on your mind. You can join us. With Kruger, he's really big, right, on positive reinforcement. I mean, you know, he did talk about it last night, you know, about the first intermission, but that seems to be a theme with him. The players have talked about it as well. He comes in with this reputation as a really good motivational speaker, and I think you're hearing a lot from the players and from him about, you know, positive reinforcement. And we brought up, maybe it was last week, whatever, after, you know, the struggles they had in the third period with Florida and Montreal. And McDermott does this too. Instead of necessarily pointing out a negative, he'll try and turn it into more of a, I don't know how to phrase it, Paul, softer criticism, or just always trying to find a positive point to stress.
Yeah, that's true, but it doesn't sound like he's afraid to, if it's really bad, to let them know that it's really bad. But it's not screaming and yelling and swearing and, you know, you guys are awful and that type of thing. It's, this is bad, this is how you make it better type of a situation. Okay, that wasn't our best period, you know that. That's not us. This is us. And then he'll bring it back to, this is when we're successful. This is what we do when we're successful. If you go out next period and you execute this, this, and this the way we want you to execute it, you are going to be successful in what you do. And I think the players are finding that when he says that and they do what he says, they're having success. And, you know, it seems like they'll just go through a wall for this guy if they have to. And they don't want to let him down. They don't want to let each other down, and they don't want to let him down.
Seems like a positive environment that he's created. That, because not only do they respect him, but he might respect, not he might, he respects them, Paul. Like, you know, we've asked this question a few times. I'm always interested to hear, player to player, to a man, how they feel about the coach, because not everybody's going to like the coach. But, you know, Ristolainen told maybe John Vogel that it's the best coach he's ever played for, and I've heard that Vizi's a big fan. Like, Vizi's a Harvard guy and has really good things to say about Kruger. So up and down the lineup, you know, and as winning, as the wins pile up, everybody gets happier. You know, it cures all.
It does, but they were on board with this guy from the get-go, before any winning even started, and you could see it. And I know culture is a buzzword, and I know every single coach uses it, but every single coach doesn't know how to put it into play. And that's the difference. And I've defended McDermott since he's been here. I think he knows how to put a culture into play and to get the guys maybe to overachieve to what they can do. And I think he's very good at it. And now I think the Sabres have a coach who's very good at it too, because people are right. Every coach talks about culture, every single one of them. But I think it takes a special coach to be able to put the proper culture into place and getting the players to buy into that, what that culture is.
And part of it might be identifying exactly how to push the buttons with your group. You know, so many guys will say, well, this is how I've always done it, and thinking that's the right thing to do, but it's not right for that group, whether that's, you know, Dan Bylsma, Phil Housley, Rex Ryan, whatever. I mean, you know, you can have success one place and not the other because you have a totally different group and a totally different set of personalities.
Yeah, and I think that was just like a Phil Housley was just inflexible in what he was doing. He had a system that he wanted implemented no matter what, paying no attention to me that maybe his players weren't set up to play that kind of a system. It wasn't what they could do. He was asking them to do something that they weren't capable of doing, and he would just say, well, we're going to practice it even more tomorrow, and they're going to get good at it. And he just was inflexible, and he's not the first coach. Rex Ryan was like that. You know, that this is what we're doing and you better figure it out, instead of trying to figure out a system that fits your team.
Let me circle back to Mittelstadt for a second, Paul, because I wanted to ask you about how you're seeing him develop. Jeremy brought up a point earlier about, you know, last year was a tough season for him, and ultimately he was thrust into the number two center spot when we were numbering lines, and he wasn't ready for it. And now he doesn't have to necessarily do that, right? You got Eichel, you got Johansson. How is his development coming along? And would you say that he and that line have looked better since Sherry has come back?
Absolutely. They've looked better since Sherry's come back, and they really have seemed to have gelled. And I still think there's still going to be growing pains. I think, you know, there are going to be times where you don't notice him on the ice. But I think as he gets better and used to what he's doing out there, there'll be more times that you do notice him on the ice and that he plays better. And young players are just, you just don't know when the growth is going to happen. And I've beat the drum many times. There's some really good players in the NHL that have taken 3-4 years to get to their promise. That's why when I see Dahlin makes a lot of errors in the neutral zone, I think back to Hedman. Hedman wasn't what he is now, his first 3 years in the league. All of a sudden, it was like, ooh, look at this Victor Hedman. The light went off for him. But the light didn't go off for him in his first couple of years he was in the league. And that's just, you know, when you're starting as an 18-year-old, and especially guys, now this isn't Mittelstadt's case, but especially guys that are coming from overseas, it sometimes takes a while, no matter how much talent they have. And, you know, I think that's the case with Casey Mittelstadt, that, you know, he's going to have growing pains. The talent is certainly there. You see it at times. When he's on his game, he's in there. He's forcing turnovers. He's fast and creating opportunities towards the net. And that's what we've been seeing in the last 3 or 4 games from him and his line mates.
Paul, can you think of a time where the lines were more stable for a longer period of time? I mean, I know he does make minor changes in game, but we've seen the same group of forwards for weeks,
barring an injury. You know, Sherry going out,
right? Yeah. I mean, I'm kind of thinking they're 8-1-1, so nobody's really pushing for any sort of change, and that's fine.
That's exactly it. Well, that's why. I mean, why change it?
Right.
I mean, they're playing well for the most part, and even when they're not playing well, except for one game, they're getting results out of it. So I think he looks at it, why change it? Why mess with it? We'll change in-game at times, but when we start the next game, we'll go right back to what's worked for us. This formula has worked. The players are getting used to it. And, I mean that's part of it, too. I think some coaches, you haven't seen coaches not change lines because you haven't seen this kind of success in, well, since 1985. You haven't seen this kind of success with where they come out and win like this. And it's just, I think that's part of it. There hasn't really been any reason to. Why change it if it's working?
803-0550 to join us. Paul Hamilton is with us on the Wester Hotline. Matt, you're on WGR with Paul. Go right ahead.
Hi, guys. Long-time listener. I just wanted to comment about the culture piece. I have to say, you guys have been talking about it a lot lately, and I have to agree with you that the culture piece has been huge with both teams. If you look at any successful organization, a lot of the same cultural norms they're trying to install in these two organizations have been seen through Fortune 500 companies, great teams, and I think that's something that can't be underrated. And even just having a good boss can make a big difference, I think. My second comment I wanted to make was, I really want to thank you guys in the morning because my dad recently passed, and you guys are the closest thing I get to listen to him, and I just want to thank you guys every morning for it.
Thanks, Matt. Thanks for being with us every morning, and keep listening and keep reaching out to us as many times as you want.
Paul, it is a follow-up a little bit on what we were talking about with Kruger in terms of the positive reinforcement, right? The whole message and the culture that they're trying to have.
No, absolutely is. And the thing is, he never gets off message. It's like, this is what is going to work, guys. I'm telling you, if you put the work in and you believe in each other and you believe in what we're doing here and you don't listen to the outside noise and you work together, it is going to work. It's not, it might work. It's like, it is going to work. And you have seen it now time and time again. Here you are with 17 points, and you've only lost once in regulation. So you're seeing, look at guys, when you do it the way you're supposed to do it, even if you don't play well, you don't have your legs that night, you still have a chance to get points and win a game. And I think that it's easy to keep them going with it and have them not falter at all when they can see that the results happen. I mean, look at the standings. I mean, again, it's October and you don't want to get too ahead of yourself. But, yeah, the Lightning have played two less games, but they're 8 points behind the Sabres. What were to happen if the Sabres would go to Sweden and sweep them or take 3 out of 4 from them? I mean, all of a sudden you're double-figure points ahead of the Tampa Bay Lightning. It's like you're going, wow, really? I mean, you got a 5-point lead over Toronto and a game in hand on the Leafs right now. I mean, that's, again, a lot can happen. Mm-hmm. Look at what the St. Louis Blues did. A lot can happen. But, at least you can enjoy it now as a fan and enjoy it while it's going on.
Hey, we did the whole interview, and I didn't even ask you about Eichel. I mean, it was one of those nights again, right, where you just – his skating, his possession, his – you know, I know last night – and I yelled at the set, too, in the first period very early when he dropped the pass back.
He did. He talked about it in the postgame. He heard you, Howard.
I thought he was so funny talking about the fans getting on his case that he heard them yelling at him to shoot the puck. And he ends up shooting it. But he's such a good passer, Paul. But it was again, one of those nights where he just – you watch him, and Jeremy tweeted out, he's only 22. You watch him and realize just how special he is and what kind of a difference maker he can be.
And he said, I want to shoot more, but he goes, I'm just not wired. He goes, I'm wired to pass the puck and distribute the puck. That's even though that he has it in his mind that he would like to shoot more. And I think he did get frustrated in the first period that he passed up some golden opportunities they worked very hard to get. And then when the goal came, it was just like, I'm firing this thing. And it's like, well, look what happens. When you fire it, you put it right through Martin Jones and in the net. I mean, you could tell he was surprised the puck went in because he had to put it through the goaltender, and he did. But that just showed him that, I think you need to shoot a little bit more here because you are creating so much offense in this game.
All right, Mr. Hamilton, so far you're doing a good job covering the Sabres. They're 8-1-1. I approve of your work.
So I only do good work when they win, and I do poor work when they lose.
Well, quite honestly, you do mostly do poor work, but I'm just trying to give you a little credit. I'm going with the Ralph Kruger positive reinforcement approach with you, Hamilton, and I'm trying to get you to feel good about yourself.
Are you trying to build a culture on your show right now?
Well, the culture on here sucks. There's only so much I can do. Please, everybody hates each other, so there's only so much one can do with culture. Thank you, Mr. Hamilton.
Yep.
All right, Paul, have a good day. Paul brought to us by Losi and Ganji, Buffalo's workers' comp attorneys working hard for hardworking Western New Yorkers. That's us. That's you. And we're talking about the Sabres with you, 803-0550 to join us, whatever your comments are from last night. We talked a little football today with Sal, too. You want to bring in some Bill stuff. We talked a little bit about Ghosts and Sam Darnold, whatever else you want to bring up. Phone lines are always open. We'd love to hear from
you. It's nice to have midweek hockey, you know. We've been thinking about that guy all day today, and to have hockey games on a Tuesday. Mm-hmm. And
not at 10:30.
And a game on a Thursday and a game on a Friday, you know, when you're going through a tough time. It's nice to have.
Oh, match call, yeah, right. Yeah, Matt. And they're winning, you know, kind of gives
even,
you.
Even so.
But like, it gives you a couple hours to kind of.
Just to have something to, you know, you wake up and say, like, I'm going to get to that game tonight. I'm going to make sure I make it to 7 o'clock. So, yeah.
Nice to know we can help people, too.
For sure. And it's you know, we talk about the sports teams and how they can do that. It's not just something to do, but it's also, you know, it's the community. I mean, yeah. So, anyway, we'll be thinking about you, Matt. So, best to you and to your family as well.
I feel like if Trey White was a Dallas Cowboy, he'd be in Chunky Soup commercials. He's got an incredible personality. He has a cool name. He's an amazing player. I remember the first time he really hit my radar was a couple of years ago when he was all over Gronkowski so much that Gronk blew a microchip and attacked him from behind. It was a really ugly scene. I said, who is this Trey White? He's come on the show with us a few times before. He goes on the network and goes back and forth with Dion. He has it all going on.
This is Cal Brandt from NFL Network. One Bills Live talking about this week's AFC Defensive Player of the Week.
Congratulations to Trey White.
Named that honor just has been tweeted out, released by the Bills after his big game against the Miami Dolphins. The Bills will get back to work today and start working on the game plan for Philadelphia on Sunday. There was a receiver trade yesterday. San Francisco picked up Emmanuel Sanders from Denver. The Sabres picked up.
They've got a lot of receivers.
Yeah. What did I read? Has Goodwin maybe been banged up? Maybe they're dealing with some injury issues at that spot, I guess, and they were looking for a little bit more help. The Sabres picked up another win, 4-3 in overtime last night over San Jose. Couple goals and two assists for Jack Eichel. He had the game winner in overtime. Other goals from Jeff Skinner and Sam Reinhart. And the Sabres are now 5-0 at home, 8-1-1 overall. They will play the Rangers at Madison Square Garden tomorrow night. Rangers lost their fifth straight game. And they've scored just 9 goals in those 5 losses. They lost at home to Arizona last night. The Sabres play the Red Wings Friday in Detroit. The Red Wings lost their 5th straight game last night and also are having issues with the putting of the puck in the net with 7 goals in their last 5 games. Boston doubled up Toronto 4-2. Same score. Florida beat Pittsburgh. The World Series opener goes to the Nationals. They beat Garrett Cole in Houston 5-4. And NBA opening night in the record books last night. The Raptors put up the banner in Toronto, handed out their championship rings, and beat the Zion Williamson-less New Orleans Pelicans. And the Clippers beat the Lakers in Kawhi Leonard's debut with 30 points. Those are your headlines. Let's get you a quick update on the NHL standings. They are brought to you by Arthur Pressman, Western New York's traffic and DWI attorney, your ticket to justice. Paul was talking about this a moment ago when he was on with us. The Sabres leading the Atlantic Division. Their 17 points are also the most in the NHL at this point. Boston has 14. Toronto has 12. Tampa, off to the 4-3-1 start, are, as Paul mentioned, 8 points behind the Sabres in the standings. Other notes of interest, the Sabres are tied for the third most goals scored in the league. They lead the league in goals for, goals against, the goal differential at plus 14. And I was curious about 5-on-5 scoring, not total even strength, because that would include 4-on-4, 3-on-3. 5-on-5 goal scoring. The Sabres are third in the National Hockey League at this point. Last season, they finished 21st in 5-on-5 goal scoring. So some stats, some standings, you get it all. Thanks to Arthur Pressman, Western New York's traffic and DWI attorney, your ticket to justice.
Funny text. Texter writes in, it's a big night for hockey parents who yell at their kids from the crowd, even after people tell them their kid can't hear it. Just the idea that Eichel
say, yeah. I thought that was hilarious.
It's funny.
Right? Players tune stuff out, and here he is saying, yeah, the crowd was getting on me for not shooting in the first period. And he did it again later in the game, kind of a same type of play where it was an odd man rush. He's got Olofsson going to the net, but he felt, I guess, that the pass was going to be cut off, so he sent it to the trailer, Reinhart, and they didn't get a shot on goal. So he did it a couple times, but hey, he got 6 shots last night, got a couple goals. He was shooting the puck plenty and driving to net. He was having an Eichel night. It was just one of those nights where you just sit back and go, thank goodness he's on this team.
If the Sabres make the playoffs, is Ralph Kruger a Jack Adams finalist?
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, I from 70-whatever points and oblivion to playoffs?
I think so, too.
Oblivion, is that right? I can.
If they make the playoffs, he might be a favorite.
How about this? What if, you really want to have some fun today, what if the Bills make the playoffs?
Is Sean McDermott coach of the year?
Is in the coach of the year. He'll be in the consideration.
Okay. Let's
what
talk.
What if the Bills and Sabres have the coach of the year in the same season? Anyway,
let's talk about the NFL coach of the year candidates.
No, don't. It's embedded or forget it. I was going
to. Oh, is it?
I was going to put it in there. That's all right. We can talk about it now. I have plenty of other stuff because you look at it. Frank Reich maybe wins the division without Andrew Luck. Breeze
Sean
is
Payton.
Out, and Sean Payton's got Teddy Bridgewater winning games with that defense too. Those are two really.
Matt LaFleur.
Does Andy Reid get consideration if Mahomes misses a month and a half?
If we're going to just do it to, you lost your quarterback,
no,
here's
just,
a trophy. No, I'm serious.
Not,
I'm serious.
But it is, I mean, you've lost the MVP from last year.
Right, right.
Mahomes.
But, I mean, if he misses 3 weeks and they go 1-2 and then you make it anyway.
Yeah.
What do we do with you? But, you were in the AFC Championship game last year.
But I'm just saying, if they keep winning.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the Saints are unbeaten without Drew Brees. Things I did not think we would be saying. Right? Bridgewater, I think, is 5-0.
Yeah.
You know, and again, it's not just him. I mean, they're getting great defensive play. But yeah, if the Bills make the playoffs, McDermott has to be considered one of the top candidates for coach of the year.
It's really too bad about Mahomes. There's a Packers Chiefs game on the way that he will miss. He'd be good to go.
Well, I was gonna say, isn't that still a month away? Is it closer? Derek, do you know the schedule off the top of your head?
I think that's this
week. You know
what?
It is.
It's this week.
I was thinking
about the Sunday night game.
I was thinking about Casey's game with New England.
Okay.
That's further down the road. He should be back in plenty of time. I think that's in December, actually. Yeah, I think he'd be back in plenty of time for their game with New England.
The Chiefs' backup is?
Matt Moore,
who, no matter what, I'm always just going to think, you know, he's not that bad of a backup.
And
because he might have played four games for the Dolphins or the Panthers and was kind of good. And I always think about, hey, you know, you could do worse than Matt Moore.
For a snack from the vending machine. The Chiefs' third-string quarterback is, no looking at the internet,
Tyler Bray.
No, although he was in Kansas City years ago.
He's a good guy.
Way to pull Tyler Bray, a nondescript
name.
You
want me to guess the Chiefs' third-string quarterback?
Third-string quarterback for the Chiefs for
Aaron
a snack.
Aaron Murray.
Nope. I don't even have a clue. Okay, actually, I do have a clue.
One clue?
His father is an NFL head coach. In the NFC.
Hold on. I was just gonna make up a name. Like,
oh, God, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
It's okay. Like, Forrest Harbaugh.
Tre'Davious Payton.
<Yeah. laughs>
Forrest Harbaugh.
I don't know. I was looking for
it. It is Kyle Shermer.
Oh, okay. Pat Shermer.
Pat Shermer's son is the third-string quarterback in Kansas City.
Yeah.
So I will get myself a snack out of the machine. Mike in Pennsylvania, you're on WGR. Go right ahead.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Sure. Thanks for calling.
So I'm originally from Western New York. I grew up in Marilla with Alden High School and been down here in Philly for 27 years now. And this has been one of the most entertaining weeks leading up to a Bills-Eagles game. And there's been a few over the years. But the state of panic down here is – and the Philly fans can go into panic pretty fast.
No.
But it's
– Really? Wow.
But it's been very, very entertaining. I mean, they're questioning – should they have kept Foles instead of Wentz? You know, do they have, you know, they have the completely wrong offense set up for Wentz's skill set. They're questioning Reich instead of Peterson. I mean, everything is up for debate right now. So it is such a perfect time to play a team that when I was looking at the schedule going into the season, I sort of penciled in a loss for this because of all the hype on the Eagles being a Super Bowl contender. But that's, I think, gone, you know, on to the side at this point. It's really, really good timing for us to be playing them.
Yeah, you know what? For me, I would have put it in as a loss too, I would assume, if Brayton wanted to get back to me on how, you know, his tracking system of the Eagles game in the offseason. I probably figured that was a loss too. And for me, as much as you were bringing up the point about the offense, to me, it's the other side of the ball, right? Like, they're having a lot of problems over there. And I looked at that. You know, defensive line thought it was going to be pretty good. They've had some key injuries. They lost, Malik Jackson went down early. Tim Jernigan went down. Fletcher Cox finally got his first sack of the season the other night against Dallas in the blowout. Their secondary has been riddled with injuries, and they're giving up pass plays left and right. That's the thing to me that, you know, is surprising about Philadelphia. And I get the discussion on the offense, but they're giving up, you know, last two games, they've got just crushed by Kirk Cousins and by Dak Prescott. So if you're feeling good about Sunday's matchup, I would look at it and go, there's a defense that's coming into town that is really having issues with its game. And yes, I know this is what we said about Miami too, but hopefully the Bills passing offense can take advantage of an Eagles secondary that's really dealing with a lot of problems right now, giving up really big pass plays.
The Bills PR has tweeted that this is Tre'Davious White's first honor as Defensive Player of the Week. Are you looking at the tweet or no?
No, okay. Someone tweeted about something else and just made a laugh.
Do you know who the last Bills Defensive Player of the Week was? They have listed the last two in this tweet.
Milano win it last year?
Matt Milano, week three of 2018. And the one to win it before him goes back to 2016.
Okay, so that would have been what, Rex's last year? Right, McDermott, 17, 18, 19. Yeah, so that's pre-Sean.
Mm-hmm.
Jerry Hughes? No idea.
There's a defensive back who got a pick six to steal a game, to seal a game. At the Coliseum in Los Angeles. You remember who got the pick six?
Yeah, I'm trying to think against the Rams that day.
He doesn't play for the Bills anymore.
Yeah, I know. I'm trying to think of the game that day.
It's Nickell Robey Coleman, week 5, 2016.
I was going to guess him, but only because he played with the Rams. But I couldn't remember that specific play.
So good for Trey White.
Yeah. He is fun, by the way. You know, I the comment we were playing from Kyle Brandt, who was on One Bills Live yesterday. He's a very good player, but such a great personality too. You know, whenever the Bills do some of their behind the scenes videos, and I remember one year at training camp they did one, and he's yapping it up and having a good time. He's the stuff. I watched the piece last week of him interviewing Ed Oliver and some of the other guys on defense about what is icing, what is offside, all the hockey terms and everything. He just seems like a fun guy to be around as a teammate. He has this outgoing personality. He is, you know, a very good player on the field. I just think there are a lot of things about Trey White to really appreciate, and I think he's just one of those guys you love having around the room because he's always seems upbeat, always seems to be interacting with teammates and having a good time. 803-0550 to join us. Sabres with a win last night. You can share your thoughts on the game, on the 8-1-1 start to the season. The head coach of the Sabres, Ralph Krueger, is going to be joining us at 9:00 this morning. By the way, if for some reason you're not able to hear the interview or maybe you only hear a portion of it, you can always use the rewind feature on our radio.com app. Yep, you can now go back up to 24 hours and listen back to something you missed, listen back to something you'd like to hear again. It's all available when you download, if you have not already. Download the app, radio.com, select WGR, and use the rewind feature to go back 24 hours. You can also talk to us about the Bills and the Eagles and the matchup. With football, I'll tell you what, here's one of the things we were talking about, because the trade deadline is Tuesday. Another receiver is off the board that was rumored to be available in Emmanuel Sanders. Should the Bills make a trade? If so, maybe here's the more important question. What would the number one priority be in your opinion? What position is number one on your list? Hey, guys, I want Brandon Bean to go get this position by Tuesday's trade deadline. So you can join us on that, too. 803-0550 or 888-550-2550 here on WGR.
I'm a pass-first guy. I always have been. So if I could go back to those first two plays, I would obviously like to shoot them. But you learn from it. I think after that, I kind of got it in my head. If I get a chance around the net, the puck was going there. You know, Rask makes a beautiful pass. You know, it's a great job on our power play, able to find one there. And then the overtime, everyone did a great job. So we stuck with it, found a way to win the game. That's what's important.
Got my key question for Ralph Krueger when he joins us at 9:00. Will you stop using Jack Eichel in road games? What do you guys think? Is that a good... Okay. He's got 14 points, 13 are at home. He's got 1 point on the road. I mean, clearly you can't play this guy on the road.
Bust.
This is why people listen to us, because we dig deep into... Yeah. 803-0550 to join us. Eichel had a big night last night. Sabres are 8-1-1 and are looking good. And, you know, Paul's here talking about the gap over Tampa and sweeping the Lightning in Sweden. How about Paul doing that? Like, this guy yells at us if we look beyond the next game in the schedule. But... the next two opponents have both lost 5 straight games and are having a lot of problems scoring. So, hey, 10-1-1 sounds great to me with the Coyotes coming in
just
Monday.
I hope you're excited for the Sabres to have the best record in the league and people to say, oh, whatever, they're just going to do what Tampa did. Right? Tampa lost last year in the first round.
Oh, my goodness.
Got swept with the best record in the league.
You have taken being negative to a higher level, my friend.
I'm finding those avenues.
I thought you were going to tell me we had the best record in the league after 35 games last year, and look what it got us. You went to another level.
Yeah.
That's really well played. Thanks. Nothing's going to get me down, man. I'm in a good place.
It was, by the way, if you're waking up today and seeing a beautiful fall day, which you're seeing, it rained hard overnight.
Mr. Hashtag Falls Elite.
Yeah. Falls doing you all a favor.
By raining?
Overnight on a Tuesday?
You are really. Wow.
It's like fall has the schedule.
You're kidding.
You know, like, what do you got going on? Sunday? What do you need for Sunday? Right now, looking at some rain in the morning, but right around 1 o'clock, 60 degrees.
Is this where you're going to tell me about last week and when it rained during the week, it was okay on the weekend?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's ideal.
That's how good fall is.
Rain,
it knows when to have.
Rain has to happen sometimes. And this fall, we've been doing great.
So, fall is so good,
yeah.
It knows when to position itself for inclement weather.
This fall, yes, so far. Last fall was terrible.
Not so good.
Last fall slept in and had to get a lot of rain in or something.
And what fall did was, fall knew the Bills were going to have three straight home games in October, so it's positioned itself to make sure Sunday weather is appropriate.
Perfect, yeah. Yeah, if you could pick, all right, there's going to be a two-hour rainstorm. When should it be? How's 3 a.m. on Wednesday? Perfect. It was raining very hard.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Thanks.
One thing about this time of year, we're getting close to Halloween, mm-hmm. and I saw a story.
Already got a pumpkin.
Did you?
My wife got one 2 weeks ago.
You ever go to a haunted house? Like one of the ones that they put
you
on.
Mean not a Disney ride?
No, one where, the fright thing where you walk in and they scare you.
Long time ago, when we first moved to our neighborhood, one of the neighbors used to build one on his front lawn. It was very good.
Really?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Got all the kids. I mean, the place was packed. Kids from all over came over to experience it. Yes.
So there's a story about this one called McCamey Manor. I don't exactly know where it is. I don't think it's local, but I can find out. That it's one of these extreme haunted houses. You have to sign a 40-page waiver to go in.
40 pages?
40 pages.
Wouldn't one page suffice? Like if you have any medical condition, you can't hold us responsible?
You actually have to take a physical before you go in. It is the kind of thing that's supposed to last hours. You come up with a safe word.
Oh my!
And almost no one finishes the experience. Apparently,
I could take about 5-10 minutes.
Do that to yourself?
There's a waiting list of 20,000 people or something.
Oh my.
But there's a show.
What is wrong with that?
So there's a show on Netflix called Dark Tourist. I've not seen this show, but it's a documentary where they go around to these different locations that are creepy, weird, whatever. Haunting, mm-hmm. and apparently one episode they go to this place and they show everybody like what it is, how it works, what the people sign up to put themselves through. A 4 to 7 hour extreme haunt experience.
Why would you do that to your nerves and your body? You kidding me? I couldn't do that for 4 hours. I couldn't even sit in a scary movie for 4 hours.
Here are your requirements: you have to be 21 or above, or have parental approval if you're 18. A sports physical and a doctor's letter stating you are physically and mentally cleared. Pass a background check, screened via Facebook or phone. Proof of insurance, medical insurance. A detailed 40-page waiver, and pass a drug test on the day that you go.
Thanks. You're scaring me from just like going into the place with all that. No, thank you.
Listen, 4 to 7 hours is terrifying on its own. Who has that much time?
Hot take. That's
dumb. I can't even make a joke about watching Buffalo sports teams for 4 to 7 hours.
So
they're both winning.
This place, McCamey Manor, has had to defend itself in court against legal trouble because people claim they get hurt. And so they record the entire thing. The Morgan Cook of the San Diego Tribune interview from him. McCamey said, the person who does this, they know the truth that I have footage of everything. I tell people they will get cuts and bruises. It's aggressive, but these people are not injured like they say they were.
Okay, let's go. No, come on, I can't handle the movie. Sabres coach Ralph Krueger is on the way in just moments. We'll talk about last night's win and the 8-1-1 start. That is next, WGR.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.